Your Excellency the President, Excellency the Director General, Honorable Ministers, representatives of the Diplomatic and International Corps, special invitees, delegates, ladies and gentlemen. It is indeed a great honor and pleasure for me to be at the World Health Assembly once more, albeit in a different capacity. My appreciation goes to the Director General of WHO for extending an invitation to me to address this august assembly. I also am delighted to see her dynamic leadership and positive changes that she's brought to the organization, which epitomize what organizations can gain from women leadership. The WHO under her leadership has continued to provide technical leadership in global health matters, shaping the health research agenda, setting norms and standards, articulating evidence-based policy options, providing technical support to countries and monitoring and assessing health trends, especially on the continent of Africa. The activities of WHO is critical on our continent, given that Africa still suffers a disproportionately heavy burden of ill health and disease. The African Union is committed to working with its member states and partners, such as WHO, to enhance the health status and quality of life of the continental citizens. Of course, this is a very critical moment globally, as it is just under 1,000 days to the target date of the Millennium Development Goals in 2015. Already preparations are underway for the post-2015 agenda. Africa is also discussing its common position, which will be its contribution to the post-2015 negotiations. But for us on the continent of Africa, it's also a historic moment for Africa and the diaspora. Since we are celebrating the 50th anniversary of the establishment of the Organization of African Unity, now the African Union. The 50th anniversary is being observed under the theme Pan-Africanism and African Renaissance. The anniversary provides us with an opportunity to take stock of the milestones of the past 50 years and to plan for the next 50 years. In this context, we are developing a framework which we call Africa Agenda 2063 to ensure transformation and sustainable development for future generations. Exciting consultations are underway. All Africans in all work, their formations are consulting about Agenda 2063, which will be a framework that we will take Africa to an integrated, prosperous, and peaceful Africa, driven by its own citizens and representing a dynamic force in the global arena. One of the major priorities of the African Union in the next 50 years is investing in its people. By 2050, Africa's population will have doubled from the current 1 billion to 2 billion, and half of the population will be young, under 18. In an age which is dubbed the age of knowledge, the intellectual capacity locked up in those 2 billion brains will be the biggest asset that Africa will have. And provided that all African children are well educated, they are skilled, healthy, and thus able to unleash their creativity, innovation, and vitality towards the continent's economic, social and cultural development. So access to education is paramount, including girls, of course, family planning for women, but more importantly, general health for the population. Just like the DG of WHO said in her speech yesterday, I quote, health contributes to and benefits from sustainable development, a measurable indicator of all other development policies, close quote. So how then do we ensure a healthy community, which will lead to a healthy nation, and then nations, and then healthy continents? I will give a story. As a young girl, myself, growing in a place called Polela, in rural KwaZulu-Natal in South Africa, I became acutely aware of the close link that exists between health and development. This occurred partly through the work of Dr. Sydney and Emily Kirk and John Castle. Departing from a disease-focused and hospital-based approach to healthcare, they established in 1942 the Polela Health Center in Polela, where I grew up. Theirs was one of the first attempts to integrate system-wide structural changes at social, cultural, and behavioral levels with biomedical interventions. They realized that poverty played a key role in the health problems in the region. And therefore, they expanded their medical work to include improving in housing, sanitation, access to clean water. They also taught the communities to produce their own vegetables and to keep a few cows for milk. They had nutritional classes for mothers, immunization programs, including going out to the schools and communities, became a critical part of their work. They also advanced healthcare promotion and prevention. And when they kept their health records, they kept family records, not just individual records. And also recognizing the difficulties that the patients and especially pregnant mothers had in reaching the medical centers when in labor, they built what they called waiting houses for women to come and stay whilst waiting for labor, for delivery. They also took the opportunity to teach them about health, motherhood, breastfeeding. This indeed cut down maternal and child mortality in the areas and also improved the general health of the children, mothers, and the community at large. This was supposed to be a pilot to be duplicated across the country as a model. It also was supposed to be the way medical students will also be taught. But the apartheid regime did not proceed with the rollout of this program because, I suppose, they thought it was too progressive and too empowering for the Bantus. So they abandoned the pilot. But their program left a lasting legacy for generations within that community. Even as I grew up, inspired by their example, I went to medical school, hoping to go back and work at Polela Health Center as a doctor, but of course, it was never to be. So we believe, excellencies, that we must all support the much talked about universal health coverage and the health financing reforms. But it is our belief that the healthcare financing reforms should themselves be universal. They should look at financing at primary healthcare level, community level, in the way that I've just shared the story of Polela with you, right up to the tertiary level. It is our firm belief that this will transform healthcare and will be more affordable than if we just concentrate on hospitals and drugs, and will produce better results and healthier people in our communities. It is also our belief that as we deal with non-communicable diseases, healthy lifestyles, including non-smoking, this should also start at community level with the children and the women. Of course, I would also like to mention a few other priorities of the African Union that I believe will have a positive impact on health. Prioritizing agriculture, food and nutrition security. By being self-sufficient also in food, we can save more than $2 billion that we are currently spending on importing food. And we think this money can go into education, health, and other priorities. But at the same time, we can also add value to the food we produce. We can also feed the world. As you know, the world is running slowly out of arable land. But in Africa, there's still a lot of arable land. And hopefully, we can work to develop it. The other priority is developing infrastructure, which we think in itself is a driver for development, but its absence is a binding constraint for development. And therefore, we look at infrastructure in its comprehensive form, starting with energy infrastructure. Of course, energy is critical for industrialization, but also for communities. They must have access to energy, and we hope that we can generate more energy using not only the fossil fuels, but solar, wind, and thermal energy. We're also looking at water infrastructure, transport, ICT, and of course, social infrastructure. The other priority we're looking at is the abundance of mineral resources on our continent, but they have to be exploited and used to transform our economy. At the moment, Africa is growing at about 5% for the past decade, but we are growing on raw materials. We think it's important that we start industrialization and that would be more sustainable. Of course, Africa needs more revenue and we need to trade amongst ourselves. At the moment, our trade is only 10% amongst ourselves compared to 60% amongst Western Europe, for instance. History teaches us that one of the key factors that enabled the USA in the 1870s, as it emerged from civil war, to overtake in the end the UK as the world-leading economy, was that 70% of its trade was within the United States, whilst the UK traded with colonies across the seas. So Africa must look at its potential of intra-African trade if it has to make sustainable progress. Of course, I've mentioned industrialization as an important part, but we are also already seeing a growing middle class in Africa, and we hope that that will continue, but we need to also see economic growth that produces jobs, because we have a young population, as I said, and we need that population to both create jobs but also to have jobs. And we must recognize the importance of small and medium enterprises as a catalyst for industrialization. We must also curb capital flight. Currently, Africa is a recipient plus minus $50 billion in foreign trade, but we actually lose 100 to 150 billion of capital. And this hemorrhage could be stemmed. Africa could no longer need foreign aid if we could just stem the capital flight that is taking place, which is three times the amount of aid that we need. And as research has shown, most of it is from non-payment of taxes and sometimes undervaluing of the mineral resources that are taken out of our continent. And a small amount is about corruption, but the majority is about people who, big companies who don't pay their prices or who misprice. Of course, we cannot but prioritize the empowerment of women and youth, because no continent, no country can reach its full potential without the full involvement of women, because women are more than half of the talent that exists in any country, and also they produce the other half, so it's important. We also are looking at biodiversity. Africa is blessed with 25% of the world's biodiversity, both flora, fauna, insect life, microbial, and marine biodiversity. This will be key in the next 50 years in developing natural medicines, pharmaceuticals, biological, and other molecules derived from this abundant gift. It is therefore important that we ensure that the intellectual capital from this treasure trove and the royalties benefit the communities and benefit Africa who develop this indigenous knowledge. And therefore, programs such as African Network for Drugs and Diagnostic Innovation are establishing regional and continental-wide collaboration to ensure that the research and development is done in Africa and benefits Africans and, of course, the world. As I conclude, I would like us to remember that health is a human right enshrined in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which was adopted by the UN General Assembly. I would also like to emphasize that health of all people is central to the transformation of Africa to prosperity, peace, and security, and is dependent upon the fullest cooperation of individuals, of communities, and of states, and of course, the international community. As you continue to deliberate on these matters for the next few days as ministers of health, I would like to urge that you do not forget the Alma Mater Declaration of Health for All. It is also important to keep in mind the fact that whilst health is a critical component of development, focusing on it alone will not deliver the prosperity that we aspire to. Attaining a prosperous, peaceful continent will require us to champion the transformation of our economic, social, and cultural paradigm. Health is but one of the critical components of development that will take us to prosperity. And thank you very much for giving me this opportunity to address this assembly. I thank you all for your attention.